All right, welcome back, everyone, for another deep dive.
Always fun to dig into these.
Yeah, today we're looking at an update from Tokyo. And yeah, he's got a lot of interesting things going on.
Yeah, I was interested to see he's added something called a return table this time.
Yeah, that's cool. So we'll definitely get to that.
Very cool.
But first, let's just kind of take a step back and look at how Tokyo's kind of set up his portfolio.
Okay.
He's got three kind of categories that he puts his investments into.
All right.
So first we have what he calls the oaks.
Okay.
And this is sort of like the bedrock.
The foundation.
Yeah, the foundation, the core of his portfolio.
Makes sense.
It's where the majority of his investments are. And it's made up of blue chip stocks and some really solid small caps.
Okay.
And his approach with this is, you know, pretty classic, just buy and hold, looking for those steady dividends.
It makes sense for the kind of core of your portfolio, right? You want something that's a little bit safer, that's going to be a little bit more stable.
That's exactly. Yeah, you don't have to worry about it too much.
Yeah.
And then his second category is what he calls the motor stocks.
Okay.
And this is where it gets a little more exciting, a little more dynamic.
Right.
So he's looking for high growth companies with these aiming for a target of like 10% annual return at least.
Okay.
And this is also buy and hold, but it's obviously carries a little more risk than the oaks.
Sure. Yeah, you're looking for that higher growth, so you gotta take on a little bit more risk.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And something I thought was really interesting with this is that he actually breaks down these motor stocks further into you know, whether they've been going up or down in value.
Okay.
So he has upward and downward. Okay. And he notes that recently there's been kind of a shift from what he called the Trump upwind to a more downward trend.
Ah, okay. Interesting. Yeah, I mean that kind of makes sense. You know, I mean, the market is always going to be affected by, you know, the general, you know, economic and political climate.
Yeah. And I thought it was interesting that he actually named it the Trump upwind. Like,
yeah,
you know, because it does seem like that had a pretty significant impact.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there were, you know, certain policies and events that happened during that time that definitely would have had an impact on the market.
Yeah. It makes you think, like, how much do we factor those kinds of things into our own decisions, you know, when we're investing?
Yeah. Definitely something to think about for sure.
So now within those motor stocks, he does mention a few specific companies.
All right.
MasterCard. He actually talks about MasterCard quite a bit.
Okay.
And I think for good reason. It seems like they are just.
Yeah, they seem to be doing pretty well.
Yeah, crushing it. They're growing like crazy. 16% revenue growth last fiscal year.
Wow, that's pretty significant.
And something I thought was really interesting about that is, you know, their core business is the payment network.
Right. Yeah.
But that's actually doing so well that it's allowing them to fund expansion into these other areas like online business and cybersecurity solutions.
So they're not just resting on their laurels with the payment network. They're branching out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're really smart about it.
That's good. I mean, you know, you don't want to be a one trick pony, right? You gotta diversify.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
He also mentions Intuitive Surgical. He says they have a great product that seems to be doing really well.
Okay.
And ASML, where some initial anxiety seemed to have kind of subsided.
All right, so things are looking up for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
But where I thought things got really interesting was his approach to Novo Nordisk.
Okay.
So in early 2024, he actually sold off 10% of his holdings.
Oh, wow.
And the price was really high.
Okay.
So really smart, you know, locking in some of those profits.
Yeah. I mean, that takes discipline to sell when a stock is doing really well.
Yeah, exactly.
Most people just want to hold on and see how high it can go.
Right.
But, you know, sometimes it's better to take some profits off the table.
Yeah.
Especially if you think it might be getting a little overvalued.
Right.
Yeah.
And then get this, he actually bought back those shares later in 2024 and early 2025 when the price dipped.
Oh, so he bought low and sold high.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he was able to, you know, basically buy back in at a lower price and increase his potential return.
That's really smart.
Yeah.
I mean, it shows that he's not just passively holding these stocks. He's actually actively managing them and taking advantage of those price swings.
Yeah. He really understands those market cycles.
Yeah. Seems like it.
Okay, so this is where things get even more interesting.
Okay.
He's introduced this new feature in his update called the return table.
Okay, this is what I was curious about.
Yeah.
So what is this return table all about?
So basically he's using, it's called the discounted cash flow method or DCF.
Okay.
And he's using that to calculate his expected annual return for each stock.
So essentially, he's trying to estimate the present value of future cash flows.
Exactly.
Okay, that's a pretty common method for value investors. Helps them figure out if a stock is actually undervalued or overvalued.
Right. And I thought it was really cool that he's sharing this with us. You know,
yeah.
It really gives us a glimpse into, you know, how he's thinking about his investments.
Definitely. Yeah. It's one thing to see what someone's doing with their portfolio, but it's another thing to understand the thought process behind it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And speaking of insights, he also reveals that his current cash position is 20%.
Okay.
Which is a little high for him. Usually he likes to keep it around 10 to 20%.
Interesting. So he's holding a little bit more cash than usual.
Yeah. And he says that he's being a bit more cautious than usual because of all the global uncertainties.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, having a healthy cash reserve is always a good idea, especially when things are a little bit uncertain.
Right. It gives you that flexibility, you know, to jump on opportunities if they come up.
Exactly.
Or just kind of weather the storm if things get a little rocky.
Yep. You got to be prepared for anything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, so let's jump into those company updates.
Okay, sounds good.
He focused on MasterCard, BlackRock, and Adobe.
Okay, so kind of a mix of different sectors there.
Yeah, good variety.
Interesting.
So first up is MasterCard. Remember how we were talking about how much they're growing?
Yeah, they're doing really well.
Yeah, well, he actually breaks down those numbers a little further.
Okay.
So it turns out 15% of their growth came from their payment network business. Which makes sense. That's their core business.
Right.
But 17% actually came from value-added services and solutions.
Oh, wow. So they're really expanding beyond just the payment processing.
Exactly.
That's smart.
Yeah. And he points out that they're using those profits from that core business to fund these expansions.
That makes sense. You know, use your strengths to build up other areas.
Yeah. They're playing the long game.
It's like they're planting seeds that'll grow into, you know, big trees later on.
I like that analogy.
Yeah.
All right, so now on to BlackRock.
Oh, okay.
And this is one of those companies that just, when you really think about it,
yeah,
it's just mind-blowing how big they are. Yeah, they're massive.
They're managing trillions of dollars in assets for investors all over the world.
It's hard to even fathom that amount of money.
It really is. And, you know, with that kind of influence, their actions have a ripple effect throughout the entire market.
Oh, absolutely. Every move they make is scrutinized.
So Tokyo highlights two key metrics for BlackRock. One is long-term net inflows.
Okay, so that's basically measuring whether investors are putting more money into BlackRock or taking it out.
Exactly. It's a measure of confidence.
Makes sense.
And they seem to have a lot of confidence because they saw a record $281 billion inflow in the last quarter of 2024.
Wow. Yeah, that's a big vote of confidence.
It really is. And then the other metric is assets under management, or AUM.
Okay, so that's just the total value of everything they're managing.
Exactly. And get this, it's currently over $11 trillion.
It's hard to even comprehend a number that big.
I know. It's just astounding.
It really shows you how dominant they are in the asset management space.
Yeah, and they're not slowing down either.
Oh, really? Yeah, Tokyo points out that they made three major acquisitions in 2024.
Oh, wow. Okay, so they're using that financial power to expand even further.
Yeah, exactly. So first they got a stake in India's HDFC asset management company.
Okay, so tapping into that huge and growing market.
Exactly.
Smart.
Then they bought Credit Suisse Asset Management.
Okay, so strengthening their position in Europe.
Yep. And lastly, they purchased a 50% stake in Mexico's infrastructure company, PINFRA.
Wow. So they're diversifying into infrastructure now, too.
Yeah. It's like they're everywhere.
It seems like it.
Tokyo actually says that BlackRock already owns somewhere between 3 and 7% of every company in the world.
That's a crazy thought.
And now they're moving into infrastructure.
I mean, what happens when one company has that much power?
Yeah. It's a little unsettling.
It really makes you think about the potential consequences, you know, for competition, for innovation, even for things like geopolitics.
Yeah. It's a big question mark.
Definitely something to keep an eye on.
Okay, so on to our final company, Adobe.
Okay, the creative software giant?
Yeah, you know, Photoshop, all those tools.
Yeah, I use their products all the time.
Yeah, me too. So they've got their Document Cloud for document management, digital signatures, Creative Cloud for all the visual content creation, and then Experience Cloud for online sales and marketing.
Okay, so they've really branched out from just the design software.
Yeah, they have. And they're doing really well. They're bringing in about $20 billion in annual revenue.
Wow, that's impressive.
And they actually exceeded their revenue target for the last fiscal year, which was $21.51 billion.
So they're beating expectations.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Despite that, their stock price actually dropped in November of 2024.
Oh, that's interesting. Usually when a company beats expectations, the stock goes up.
Right, you would think so.
So what happened?
Well, Tokio explains that the drop was due to Adobe projecting slower revenue growth through 2025.
Oh, so even though they're still growing, it's not going to be as fast as it was before.
Exactly. And it seems like the market is really focused on that projected slowdown.
It just shows you how sensitive investors can be to those future projections.
Yeah, they're always looking ahead, trying to anticipate what's coming next.
Got to stay ahead of the curve.
Right. And this is where Tokyo's return table comes in.
Okay.
So for Adobe, his DCF model, which takes a more conservative approach, is projecting an annual return of 6%.
Okay.
But if you were to use their previous growth rate, that return could jump up to 12%.
Oh, wow. So a big difference depending on which assumptions you use.
Yeah, it's a good reminder that those models are just tools.
Right, they're not crystal balls.
And you have to be careful about the assumptions you're making.
Definitely got to use your own judgment, too.
Okay, and speaking of, you know, interpreting information, remember how Tokio mentioned that Adobe tried to acquire Figma?
Yeah, I remember that.
Well, that deal actually fell through.
Oh, no.
And they had to pay a $1 billion penalty.
Ouch, that's got to hurt.
It's a big reminder that even the most successful companies can make mistakes.
And those mistakes can be costly.
Absolutely. So we've got MasterCard exceeding expectations, BlackRock making big moves, and Adobe navigating some challenges.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how these different companies are approaching the market.
Yeah, they're all on different paths,
yeah,
but they're all trying to achieve that same goal, which is growth.
And that's what makes it so fascinating to follow.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it really makes you think, you know, how does Tokio use this information, you know, to adjust his own strategy?
Well, he actually gives us a bit more detail about his activity for February.
Okay.
And, you know, remember how he bought back those shares of Novo Nordisk after selling earlier?
Yeah, when the price was low.
Right. Well, in February, he saw another dip in the price and he bought even more.
Wow. So he's really doubling down.
Yeah. He seems pretty convinced that Novo Nordisk is a good long-term investment.
Makes sense.
And, you know, remember how we talked about his cash position being a little high at 20%? I think that was a strategic move because it allowed him to take advantage of this opportunity with Novo Nordisk.
Yeah, it's like having that dry powder ready to go.
Yeah, exactly. You never know when a good deal is going to pop up.
So we've covered a lot of ground today.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about Tokio's investment philosophy. We dove into his analysis of MasterCard, BlackRock, and Adobe. And we even got a glimpse into his recent trades.
Yeah, it's been a really insightful deep dive.
So what are the big takeaways here? What can we learn from all of this?
I think one of the most important things is that you need to have a clear investment philosophy.
Yeah.
You know, Tokio has a really well-defined approach. He knows what his goals are. He knows how much risk he's comfortable with. And he has specific strategies that he uses.
Yeah. And he's not afraid to do things differently, like, you know, not using charts.
Right. He's very focused on the fundamentals in the long term.
And I love how transparent he is with the return table.
Yeah, it's really helpful to see how he's actually thinking about his investments.
It makes it so much easier to understand his decision-making process.
And it also shows that he's not just blindly following some formula. You know, he's using his own judgment and experience.
Okay, so what about Tokio's thoughts on BlackRock? You know, that was a pretty thought-provoking part of the update.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit concerning to think about one company having so much influence over the market.
Yeah.
But it's also just the reality of the world we live in. You know, these massive asset managers have a lot of power.
And it's something we need to be aware of.
Definitely. It raises some important questions about, you know, the balance of power in the financial system.
And what it means for the future of the economy.
Exactly. So as always, we're left with more questions than answers.
Yeah, but that's what makes these deep dives so interesting.
Absolutely. It gets you thinking, it challenges your assumptions, and it helps you to become a more informed investor.
And hopefully a better investor.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So keep exploring, keep learning, and as always, happy investing.